You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another disappointed episode of the Assembly Call, as today your Indiana Hoosiers lose at Purdue by a score of 79-59 in a game that really wasn't that close. This result drops IU to 14-10 overall and 6-6 in the league. And this is a game that IU got off to a decent start, as we've seen a number of times this season, but a lengthy offensive lull late. Mid to late first half allowed Purdue to pull away. IU came out, didn't score in the first eight possessions of the second half, and allowed Purdue to extend the lead. And it was really all she wrote, even at that point, as Purdue ends up winning the game 79-59. I'm your host, Andy Bottoms. I'm here with Jeff Marlowe and Bob Motes. And we're going to break it all down for you on this edition of the Assembly Call IU postgame show. And let's start this show the way we start every show, and that is with our banner moment. And in a game that really wasn't particularly close, the banner moment almost had to be the beginning, where IU came out and got off to a really good start, saw a number of good things from a cutting standpoint. IU was able to get a layup from Mackenzie Mbako to start the game on a nice cut after a kick out from the post. Khalil Ware gets a dunk. Malik Renew gets a hook shot. Malik Renew gets a layup off a nice cut. And IU scored 8 points on its first four possessions. Even, you know, had 10 points after, you know, a couple possessions later. Trey Galloway made a nice cut and got fouled. And then it seemed like that player movement stopped. But it was a really good opening start to the game from IU that didn't take the crowd out of the game by any means, but at least prevented them from really getting going and the game getting away from them. Because Purdue scored a lot in those early possessions, but IU still had the lead just because they executed well at the beginning. And that gave some hope early on in the game, and that quickly went away later in the half as IU really struggled to score. But I thought the start was really important. It was a game that I think everybody's worst fears could have been realized early on had this team not come out and played well at the beginning. I give them credit for doing that, but again, the game really got away from them after that. And so that was the banner moment because it was one of the only leads that IU ended up having in the game. All right, with that, let's talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, well on for the team.
And our banner moment today, as always, is brought to you by our friends at Home Field Apparel, who is now in their seventh season sponsoring the Assembly Call and their third as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. Home Field has the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere. And since IU is their flagship school, you know, more high quality gear with unique IU logos from the past is always right around the corner. And that showed up yesterday as they rolled out a refresh of the IU collection as well as the Purdue collection, complete with hats, joggers with the bison on it, hoodie with the bison, a shirt commemorating the 1993 Big Ten champions, the great Terry Morin shirt, just a shirt for the hyper. So, you know, just when you thought the IU collection at Home Field couldn't get any better, they turn around and do just that. They make it better with some great new releases this week. So make sure you go and check those out. And so really exciting to see what they have. And you know that there will be more at some point coming as well. And you also know that no matter what you buy, it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through the Kelley School of Business and isn't shy about showing its love for the Hoosiers. So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME23 to get 15% off your entire first order. Again, that's promo code HOME23 for 15% off. Once again, that website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, now it's time to move the ball, find the open man, get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team. Both of whom probably questioned their judgment in agreeing to do the show, as Jared was at a father-daughter dance. Coach Tonsoni is covering the game, which I'm sure he was not enjoying very much at all either. And Ryan is doing some work to get ready for the Super Bowl at the big lead. So I do have two of our esteemed guests from the Back Home Network here with me, with Jeff Marlowe and Bob Motes. Bob, I will throw it to you first for your opening thoughts on tonight's game.
I really think Jeff's going to have a lot more fun tomorrow doing the work.
It would be honestly hard to have less fun, I would imagine.
I really think so. Opening thoughts, I mean, 20-point loss up at Mackey. It's hard to play offensively 2-on-5, and there's so many times I feel like IU is doing 2-on-5 where you have a ball handler and they're trying to get it to one specific player. And I mean, I wrote something down at the, you know, at the half. And one thing IU did do well in the first half, they basically just let Edie and Smith be the two guys that killed them. It wasn't like you saw Lawyer going off with 3 3-pointers or Lance Jones penetrating the lane and getting buckets, or Gillis doing what he's done from the perimeter all year. And they were, I think, down 12, I believe, at the half. But conversely, IU's problem was you had, I think it was Cups, Leal, Walker, and Bang, or Sparks in the game. They took up 40 minutes of playing time. They took a combined 4 shots. And you're not going to win. You're not going to beat a team like Purdue when you're using Trey Galloway and Malik Renew standing toe-to-toe with Zach Edey and Braden Smith. Not the way that this is designed, and not the way that Painter was going to defend him, which was basically taking Renew out as much as he could and getting, you know, letting Galloway kind of, you know, and Trey, I thought, had offensively a good game across the board. It's just there wasn't a whole lot else of not a whole lot of other firepower in that game, especially when it was competitive, to really offset what was happening. You got to get more guys involved. You got to get guys more shots. That's all there is. That's really all there is to it, because in the modern game of basketball, and if you're not, you know, and even if you're coaching 8-year-olds, you know, it's really, you know, yeah, you can have that, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, one kid can dribble and drive and shoot a layup. We're not playing that. You know, this is a much more advanced stage, and trying to beat a team, the number 2 team in the country with 2 guys on offense, just isn't working for you.
Yep. Coach Marlowe, I do assume that better days are ahead for you tomorrow with the women's game. But what are your opening thoughts on the loss tonight?
Couple things, actually. You know, first of all, I want to I want to pass along some condolences to the Farrell family on Yogi's father passing away. So for people who hadn't seen that news, so condolences to them, at least for me. Maybe I shouldn't speak here on a Simply Call for that, but I'll say that. You know, Bob hit a lot of great points, and I, you know, we'll talk a little bit more in Meaningful Moment and look at some of the numbers, but you started the game with some really nice movement. You had some people, you know, the ball was moving, the players were moving, and you were scoring on about every possession in that first 6 to 8 minutes from that standpoint. And so I really liked what I saw. I still don't know where the disconnect is and why we get so stagnant. I know lineups have a lot to do with it. It really does. I get that. And I was not a big fan of Sparks in the game tonight. I like Sparks. I like the kid, but he does not draw Edie away from the basket. And you've got to draw Edie away from the basket to open things up. And then that also, you know, it also puts him in a little bit worse position defensively. Maybe you draw a foul on him. I know he's not going to pick up many, but you draw maybe an extra foul or so on him because he's trying to guard on the perimeter. Bob, I kind of get your inner and Andy too. I'm not trying to take over the show here. But even a little worse, I thought that group at the end of the game, last 5-6 minutes, I thought they played a little more freely. And again, they were behind. It's easy to play a little freer when you're behind, but I kind of liked what I saw. They were pushing the pace a little bit. They were shooting threes. They weren't hitting a ton of them, but they were at least shooting more volume threes with the group that was out there. So I really don't have a lot of, I'm not going to fill time here, but you know, it is what it is right now. This team just can't shoot consistently enough, especially from beyond 5 feet, to get back into a game once the, you know, and for the most part, now they did the other night at Ohio State, but I don't think very many of us had confidence that once they got down 16, 17 points that they could come back in Mackey.
Yeah. Not in this environment. You know, in terms of storylines, I'm going to start with the offense. I had it at IU ended up in the second half at 1 point per possession. I think a lot of that was, inflated a bit late with, you know, some more lax Purdue defense with the game largely out of reach. And I do think you're right, Jeff, that some of the guys did play a little more free. But IU ended up at 0.87 points per possession over the course of the game. Purdue only ended up at 1.16, which, given how they usually execute offensively, it's certainly not great what you look at from a defensive standpoint. But, you know, IU's not going to beat a really good team like Purdue scoring the way they did. There was a stretch kind of mid to late the first half. They scored 1 point in 14 possessions. Mm-hmm. Then you had the three Trey Galloway buckets to end the half, and then they came out the first eight possessions of the second half and didn't score. I think a lot of that, you know, we touched on already. I think some of it was lineup stuff, not being able to have Malik Renew out there during part of that stretch, not having Khalil Ware out there in the, you know, a big chunk of that stretch in the second mm-hmm. half. But Bob, I mean, what, how do you kind of watch this team offensively and juxtapose what you saw at the beginning of the game, where you had good player movement, some really nice passes for easy baskets, with what it really became that to me just felt like when things started to go poorly, the shot selection got to be terrible, and it was guys trying to just, I think probably, you know, in a positive way, mm-hmm. trying to make plays for people, but the shots were just terrible in those stretches. The player movement went away. Like, how do you kind of, what do you chalk that up to as you watch the game, seeing that there are flashes where they can do it, but then other times for long stretches of time, there's just nothing to be done?
I think to start a game, oftentimes teams will start off kind of a script. Like, we're going to try maybe five actions in this order to kind of see how we're going to be defended. And oftentimes, you know, early in games, teams will score on those initial actions just because, you know, they're running them crisply. And I felt like, you know, IU usually has good starts to their games. It's not, you know, usually the wheels start falling off somewhere between the 12 and 8 minute mark of the second in the first half. It feels to me like they came out, they were loose, they made the right reads, and then that first read is kind of adjusted to. And I think in many respects, Matt Painter has been good at this throughout his career at Purdue. He's going to, and all really good coaches do this, they're going to take away the thing you want to do the most, whether it's a player, whether it's a certain action. And I feel like that when they begin to sag off a little bit and they begin to take away the passing, you know, really the cutting, you know, the cutting lanes for Indiana and really interfere the passing lanes, it kind of started slowing IU down a little bit. And then they started hitting on the offensive end. And the next part of this, and this is probably the worst part, is what this team has done traditionally throughout the season. When the other team starts scoring and they're not able to match it, the tunnel vision begins. And I think we see a lot of that tunnel vision where IU is getting down into position, or, you know, they're starting their offense and they don't see the whole floor. And that's a good example of that would be the Cups turnover. Just a simple little pass where it goes to a pick six. Renew had one where he was pushing tempo. Gunn's sprinting down to the corner like he's supposed to. Oh, I need to get it to Trey. I need to go to the base. I need to get it to our guard to set up a set or to get into our flow. When instead you had CJ wide open in the corner and you pass and cut, and then you're there for the rebound. So you feel like oftentimes it's kind of almost a wash, rinse, repeat where they miss a couple, the movement, and then the other team hits a couple, the movement stops because they start kind of tightening up a little bit. And it's hard for them to get back out of it. And then you don't really regain whatever you learn from the first five plays of your script.
Yeah, and Coach Marlowe, throw this one to you as well. Yeah, this was a really rough game for Malik. Ends up fouling out, only played 23 minutes, was 3 of 11 from the floor, ended up with 6 points, and he had 4 points within the first couple minutes of the game. What did you see from Purdue that they did to really make him as uncomfortable as he was and kind of take him out of things as a guy who's been such a leader for IU so far this season?
I put it in the Discord. Malik was just bad tonight. I mean, it just no really other way to say it. There were times, again, he over-dribbled tonight. I'm not a fan of when he's trying to back down and he gets two, three people around him. He's great when it's one-on-one. Malik's as good as you got in the Big Ten, maybe. But Purdue was digging and sometimes coming with two, maybe even three guys, and he's still dribbling, and we're not getting it out to people who are open. Now, not that we're good at very, very good at hitting the shot when we kick it out. He got some foul trouble, and I thought you could kind of see it in his face, Andy, especially in the second half. The frustration was really visible, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fouls that got called on him. And again, you're on the road in the Big Ten. I get it. I wouldn't have thought there were some fouls I didn't think were fouls, but I'm biased. I'm a fan of the team in red. But yeah, I just felt like that frustration went, especially for Malik. And I'm not going to try and be a total armchair psychologist here, but when you can kind of see his visual frustration, he's really just, you know, he's not in the head's not in the game. And I just thought that was a lot of it for him.
Yeah, I thought the difference was, you know, we saw some of that at the beginning of the second half in the Ohio State game, and he was able to kind of reset, get back in, make a couple plays, and settle himself down. And he never was able to make those plays and settle himself down, and it just kind of snowballed for him. So I'm going to flip the other side of the ball a bit here and talk about the defense. You know, first half seemed like they were taking the approach of, we're going to let Edie get his, really tried to take away three-point shooters, weren't helping off much. And Edie still got, you know, got some points, but didn't really get, you know, Ware got it, picked up a second foul and ended up sitting out, which, you know, you can replay thoughts from about the auto benching from previous shows on that. But Braden Smith really got going as well. Those two, I believe, combined in the first half for more points than what IU had. They combined for 45 on the game. And Coach Marlowe, I'll throw this back to you first. You know, what was IU? You know, Cups, I think, struggled. You know, they're basically weaving him through screens and rescreens with Edie and just trying to get him going downhill. But you know, what did you see that caused some of the breakdowns from IU that led to Smith being able to get going so much and score so much early in the game?
A couple things. I thought, first of all, I thought Gabe was getting caught up in the screens and maybe they weren't communicating some of the screens early. I'd be interested to see what Bob thought about a little bit too, just in case. But I was a little surprised with Braden Smith that they were so committed to going over the top of the screen and then allowing him to get downhill. I know we were trying not to leave shooters, but I'm not sure Braden Smith's shot's the quickest thing in the world. So I think you could have gone under the screen and maybe still been able to get back to the three. But I think they were so, Andy, in my opinion, I put this in the Discord and Bob was in there for a little bit. I think they got so locked into the scouting report was do not leave the shooters. And the bigs were told, whoever was guarding, I saw this a couple times with Khalil, I saw it a couple times with Sparks, when they were guarding Edie, they didn't come and help either. So it was a lot of just straight downhill drive, and some of it was on Gabe, but I felt like Gabe was pretty much doing what the scouting report told him to do when he wasn't getting any help. And I get it, but they were so locked in that they weren't going to leave a shooter in the corner and they weren't going to come off of Edie. There wasn't anybody else there. And so it just seemed like their attitude was they were going to give up twos and dunks than long threes. And I think they felt like going into the game, that was their best scouting report strategy to stay in it late and possibly get out of there with a win. But I don't think you can let, personally, I don't think you can let Braden Smith get layups. If you're making him shoot 12 and 14 footers, that's different.
Yeah. I thought there were times when they would do that. And then the big guys getting basically walled off by Purdue's post players so there's really no even opportunity to step in. But Coach Motz, I'll throw it back to you. You know, what did you see from IU defensively that contributed to Smith getting off to such a good start?
I think a lot of it was, you know, again, Matt Painter early on kind of ran his stuff, saw there was vulnerability, saw how they were guarding, going over the top of the screens versus going underneath them. And that's where the variance in ball screen coverage becomes essential and how you vary over the course of a game. The worst thing... No, you can't let Braden Smith drive the ball on you. You have to find a way to keep him out of the lane. I'd be like with Fletcher Lawyer, let him drive all day. But Braden Smith, you know, in reality, what the game, you know, when there should have been a moment where the thought was, okay, how do we get this out of his hands faster? How do we get this where he's forced to, you know, go to a secondary option in the set a little quicker versus just kind of letting Purdue dictate their terms on offense. The last 2 years, IU has done a phenomenal job of doing just that. They've done a phenomenal job of basically taking, you know, getting the ball out of Purdue's hands and just not letting them, you know, not letting them run their sets to their maximum efficiency. And what you were seeing was you were just seeing a team that's very good at executing in Purdue and a team with Indiana that struggles to communicate on defense. Coach is exactly right. They need to be calling the screen out, you know, a lot sooner. They know it's coming. You know, he's got his back to the action as he's got the pressure coming. So, you know, he may know it's there, but he doesn't know exactly where it is. And a little bit of, just a little bit of help, just a little bit of forcing Smith to go a little more east-west. And that, I think, was part of the issue, too. And I think Jeff hit the nail on the head, which is you can sometimes tie yourself down to a scouting report so effectively that you basically prevent yourself from, you know, being able to adjust to the adjustments that the other team is making. Same time, yeah, they scored 37. Honestly, I believe an Indiana University team going into Mackey Arena should be able to score 37 points and a half. Just that's the other part of this, which is your defensive game plan wasn't awful. And eventually they did clean up pretty well with Smith. But when you're not hitting and when your offense is that inefficient, it's really hard also to get. And it's also hard because you're playing in transition more. And that's another issue that you run into in that situation. So I don't know. I think a lot of it with Cups is, you know, he'll take the brunt of it, but you have a freshman guard in the Big Ten in a system that's not communicating particularly well, and this is the result.
Yeah, I think, yeah, two things on that. One, I think the communication piece is pretty critical. I mean, we again saw tonight multiple defensive breakdowns where you have nobody's on a shooter, then two guys go, you know, lunge at the same shooter and that kind of stuff. And you're so far into the season at this point to be having those kinds of communication breakdowns. It's obviously disappointing. And I think with Cups, I think you hit it on the head, Coach Marlowe. I don't totally put that on him because I think he's doing what they're asking him to do. But there just didn't seem to be quickly enough a plan B. And I think the net result of that, you know, talking to offense and defense, is everything for IU seemed like a struggle and everything for Purdue seemed really easy. It's about as simple as that. And I think it speaks to where these two teams are right now. You know, one other, you know, quick storyline just to throw out, I know we'll do stats in a bit. You know, the rebounding totals, IU ends up minus 15 on the glass. Purdue gets 15 offensive rebounds compared to just 5 for IU. A lot of times IU just wasn't even sending anybody to the glass. And I just think you look at some of these statistical areas where IU really needed to, you know, to do well. They had to try to, you're not going to neutralize them because of Edie's size. But that was just the one glaring statistical area. IU 4 of 16 on threes was the other one. But Coach Marlowe, I mean, I just felt like some of the rebounding is just same things we've seen before. Nobody getting a body on anybody, and then Purdue just going and getting the ball, and IU standing around and watching.
Yeah, it's frustrating because there are glimpses of it, like the last game at Ohio State, where you felt like they were starting to hit somebody on a screen out, and they were, you know, we're getting to the loose balls. And tonight, again, I get it. Edie's going to give them an advantage on the glass with his size and his ability to kind of back tap. But there was one possession there, Andy, I think it was the first half, where what, 3-4 straight offensive rebounds? Purdue ended up not scoring on any of it. They ended up throwing it away on a ball that went out, a shot that barely grazed iron, and he went to save it and threw it right to Mike Woodson, if I remember right. So the rebounding part of it's frustrating. And again, I think it goes back. You look, you know, again, I realize that tonight Malik only played 23 minutes, but in a game like this, Malik has to have more than 5 rebounds. And that's just a given. But there's just right now, defensively, because they're scrambling, in my opinion, they end up scrambling so much to cover shooters, and we leave our feet way more than any other team in the country on a pump fake, but we're scrambling to cover shooters. Well, now there's no, you're not in position to rebound. So it all kind of ties back into the fact to the defensive lapses because of the miscommunication or the no communication that gets you into a situation where you're trying to cover. And like tonight, Anthony Lill, I'll go back to, here's one to me, Andy, that I was wanted to bring up. There was late in the, it was in the second half. It wasn't going to matter. It was not going to matter win or loss, but it gets down to like six on the shot clock. They dump it into Edie and we triple team him. And then that leaves Lawyer wide open. Well, Anthony Leal's really two spots away, but he rushes out to try and contest the shot and he fouls him. But why are we triple teaming with less than a five on the shot clock? I didn't understand that move at all. And I'm not sure that was in the game plan. I think that's part of that miscommunication that then goes into scrambling to cover shooters and then leaving people open for rebounding.
And I would just say, I think sometimes this team pulls a crazy, you know, Humphrey in October, crazy Ivan, where they just all of a sudden somebody just sips and sips. And it's like, you could just tell, like, Walker is just now dead sprinting down to try to take away something from Edie, leaving, I don't know, the guy, the last guy in the gym, the last guy in the northern half of the state you want to leave open for a three-point shot. And Zach Edie with a 45-degree angle to hit him with enough time for him to catch and shoot. It's again, that sort of almost, sometimes Coach Tom Sonny calls it fake hustle. That's a fake hustle type play. Mm-hmm. You're trying to make something happen when something isn't, you know, when it's really not your time to let that work, to let that be the case. And I felt like throughout the game, Khalil Ware did a great job with, you know, early on of his length was really disrupting Zach Edie. So putting him in that position to do so, more so than anything else, you know, IU may be one of the few teams in the Big Ten, maybe one of the few teams in the country that could, hypothetically, if he stays out of foul trouble, take Edie more one-on-one because of who they have down there, because of the diversity and the differences in those spots. Last thing I would say is secure the ball on rebounds. Secure the ball. Ball's hitting guys in the hands, and I don't know why it's why, you know, heck, just two hands on the rebound too. I mean, I see a lot of guys going up and trying to slap it, and it's just, we probably lose half of the offensive rebounds we're talking about just to basic ball security. Not just not blocking out, but just grabbing a ball and being aggressive with that grab, being aggressive with the catch.
Yep. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our breakdown of IU's 79-59 loss to Purdue. We'll go to some meaningful moments you might have missed and then go inside the numbers. You're listening to the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, this is AJ Moye. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers!
All right, and welcome back to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Andy Bottoms here with a pair of coaches, Bob Motes and Jeff Marlowe, and we're breaking down IU's 79-59 loss at Purdue. And it's now time for today's meaningful moment that you might have missed.
meaningful moments that you might have missed.
Well, I'm gonna go back to the end of the first half on the heels of that stretch of 14 possessions where IU had 1 point. It seemed like the game was really getting away from IU in that stretch, and you had three straight plays where Trey Galloway was able to get buckets, hit essentially a floater, push shot, whatever, from the free throw line, which after he had just missed two free throws, I was inclined to say maybe he should start using that as his free throw form. I'm not sure. But anyway, he had that, had another great reverse after that, and then off a nice defensive play from CJ Gunn was able to get a bucket late in the half. And that really, I think it was 13 maybe before he did that. It still traded baskets a little bit in there, but got it down to 12 at halftime to at least make what seemed to be a workable margin until the first few possessions of the second half proved that that was not true. But I thought, you know, in terms of things that you might forget about the game, that was really the last time that IU showed significant signs of life. I thought Trey was, again, felt like a game where he was just forced to try to do so much. Ends up 4 of 11, was 0 of 4 on threes. Just didn't seem like he got his legs under him on a number of those attempts. He did lead the team with 7 assists as well, had 3 rebounds, did have 3 turnovers. So certainly among the highlights for him was that stretch of play at the end of the half. So Coach Marlowe, as the resident president of the Trey Galloway fan club, I'll throw this to you first. Any thoughts on that stretch or just Trey's play overall in the game tonight?
I thought Trey played okay. I mean, it was not his best game. He did struggle a little bit shooting the ball, but it across the board, I mean, it's everybody struggled. Andy, you pointed it out, there's two significantly long stretches where nobody scored. So I have a hard time laying that all on one player when it's but there. But I do think that I feel like at least when I watched the game, Trey, Anthony, even a little bit today, I felt CJ Gunn felt some pride in the name on the front of the uniform. I thought, at least they were playing hard. They were battling. And I want to go to kind of hear the same thing, Andy. I know he can't play 40 minutes, but right now you talked about the assists. Who do you probably trust the most on the floor right now with the people who are available healthy? Trey's probably the one person you trust the most. We don't play for another week. I would have got maybe the full 40 minutes out of Galloway tonight and put, and taking some timeouts, maybe especially when Purdue was making run to maybe catch him a breather here or there. But I will go back to this. And I think Bob may have even mentioned it a little bit. To me, a meaningful moment tonight involves Trey. We took him out. We were only down 4, I think. We take him out. And I get it. I understand they were trying to give him a breather, but we come out of the timeout that we take him out and we turn it over on a 5-second count. We can't even get the ball in. And then it was also that lineup that I think we talked a little bit about in the Discord, that just who was going to score, who was he just didn't have a good vibe. But by the time Trey gets back in, it's a double digit game. And so I just felt that was, again, we probably weren't going to win and Trey wasn't playing the greatest game, but I would have probably milked 40 minutes out of him tonight if I could have.
Yeah, that's what I was going to kind of tee you up with that, Bob, because I was going to call that stretch out. I mean, I, in the text with the guys, I mean, that was to me when it really went sideways at that point. Now I'll give Woodson credit. He left Mbako in for a long time in the first half, knowing that, he needed him to be a threat on the court. But basically as soon as they took Galloway out, things kind of went to crap. As you said, he took him out after that timeout, which seems strange to me, like you're getting him rest in the timeout. And so you have that play where they're trying to run somebody open. I think it was Leal they were trying to get the ball. Like, Leal's just not a guy who's in that situation normally, getting hounded by a solid defensive guard and having to figure out a way to get himself open. So you do that. Things really, you're 100% right. That's where it snowballed. I'm trying to figure out where I took this. Yeah, take a timeout, 5-second call. The next defensive possession, Ware gets his second foul and goes out. Then you have that Cups turnover that leads to a Purdue 3. You could hear either players on the court for Purdue or the bench calling out what IU was doing. And Braden Smith just freelanced. He didn't even follow his guy on that play. Knew right where Cups was going to go. He had predetermined where he was going to go and did something like that. And that is, for all the faults that you may say that Trey Galloway has, like, he's able to improvise a little bit in some of those situations when it's not there. And And so I thought that stretch where he was out was absolutely critical. So Bob, I'll throw it to you for thoughts on that stretch or Galloway in general.
Much like Coach said, I mean, I felt like Trey, again, the shooting wasn't great, but again, nobody's was really. And I feel that it's almost unfair to the kid, the position they're putting him in, because I do feel like, you know, he's being asked to be a Big Ten point guard, when in reality, he's really just a very good, very effective small wing. I felt he was really good at tonight, especially in ball screens, doing a really good job of finding open spaces and creating angles. Something that, you know, if he had asked me 2 years ago, could he have done that? It definitely was not in his skill repertoire. But I think more and more with Trey, it's a thing of, you put him on, you know, when Cups wasn't working on Braden Smith, you put Trey on Braden Smith. When, you know, things are going south, you're putting the ball in Trey's hands and expecting him to make something happen. It goes back to kind of what I opened with, which is you can't play 2-on-5. And I think so many times it feels like the system that we're running offensively is designed for this guy at 35% utilization, this guy at 25% utilization. And even if they're not using the analytics that way, it definitely feels like this team said, you know, the mindset is, we need to get the ball to Malik. We need to get the ball to Khalil. We need to get the ball to Trey. And to your point, Andy, about Leal, it may seem counterintuitive what I'm saying, but he's not a guy that's going to be doing a lot of movement away from the ball. Like, he's more of a guy that's going to be, he's open because the help leaves him. That's how he gets open. You know, if you're trying to get him to be a primary guy in this situation, it's not really the same. It doesn't really work too well. So you kind of have to do the read and react. And the whole point about read and react concepts are you have to actually react. You just can't go on autopilot. Because by this point in the season, everybody knows what you're running. Everybody knows what you're calling it. Everybody's got the notes. So now that improvisation, that reaction, the counters, all the things, whatever you call them in your program, in your system, have got to be in a position where your guys knowing, okay, you know where Smith is. That guy is not just standing there. He's cutting or he's doing something else. And I don't feel like I use at that point yet where I still think that this team's still a little bit on autopilot on that.
Yeah, the other, I guess it's maybe a series of moments that I'll talk about. If we want to try to take something positive away from this game, it would probably be the second half play of CJ Gunn. He ends up with 13 points in the second half. We talked about Galloway. Galloway did not score at all in the second half, although he did have five of those seven assists then. Only four players scored for IU in the second half. That was led by CJ Gunn with 13. He was 4 of 5 from the floor, 3 of 4 from three in that stretch, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. So, you know, in fitting with the way this team has played, his worst shooting came from the foul line. But I think it's difficult to figure out what to take away from that or if we should take anything away from that, because some of those did kind of come in garbage time, but some of those were, you know, not all at the very end of the game and those kinds of things. So, again, in the interest of trying to find something positive, I thought CJ shot it confidently. Shot it well in the second half. Again, it wasn't a pressure situation, so take that all with a grain of salt. But, you know, Coach Motz, I'll throw that to you first. What were your impressions of CJ in the second half and what was able to help him be successful? And I will say he made a nice defensive play to end the half when he got the block three that led to the Galloway bucket. So, you know, did some good things on that end of the floor in the first half. But thoughts on what you saw from him in the second half and how sustainable you think it might be going forward?
Comes into the game during a free throw situation, gets on the lane, and he's the one who secures the rebound. And I've been noticing when CJ comes in, he's rebounding the ball well. I feel like that he is making an impact, and he is doing a lot of the little things at times. I just feel like it's just where it happens. A lot of times it's an experience mistake, or it's almost like he's pressing too hard of a mistake. And that's, I think, what we saw a little bit in the first half. Goes out in the second. And, I mean, if you're a scorer and you're hitting shots, I don't believe in garbage time. I mean, I believe that if you're coaching a team, you're getting something out of your dudes and you're trying to find something to build on. When you're getting just blown out on the road in a rivalry game. You got the Purdue fans yelling IU sucks and everything else. It's just, it's a hostile environment. You're trying to get something that you can build on at the end of it. I think what CJ did tonight is something that can be built, you know, could be built on, especially for him, a kid that hasn't been shooting the ball a lot. And when he is shooting it, not shooting it particularly well, there's some confidence there that's built. And I think the recognition of, you go in, the first thing you do is you get a rebound on a night where you're not rebounding the ball well. You had a great defensive play to end the half. You were, and I believe he was their leading scorer tonight.
Yeah, he was.
So, you know, maybe it isn't. Maybe nothing comes of it. But at the very least, it's something in this next. And again, we're a week in between games. It's something for this coaching staff, you know, to say, okay, we know you can do this. And also to be able to say to the other players, look what this guy did in this situation. You guys know we have other options on this team.
Yeah, I think when you look at that, it was interesting. He was a guy that Woodson had talked about this week in terms of needing to try to get minutes for him. He also has mentioned him in the same breath as Caleb Banks, who did not play at all in this game, which he seems to be pretty deep in the doghouse at this point. I would think if you're not getting into this game based on how it was going. But Coach Marlowe, any other meaningful moments that you had that you wanted to talk through? I know you said you had one, but you may have already brought it up. So
no.
If so, we can move along. But if you have one, have at it.
I just want to kind of get on top of what Bob was saying. I totally agree. There are not, you know, you were down 20. I get that. But in a game like that, it's easy. I've been there as a coach. Bob's been there as a coach, where that 20-point game ends up being 35. And so you're, as a coach, you want to see your kids keep battling. Was it great? Were we winning? No. But you want to keep battling. And there is no such thing as garbage time, especially your kids coming in off the bench. You're trying to get something out of them. You're trying to build some confidence. You're trying to build some energy with them. I think the one thing I would say about CJ, and I know there's going to be a lot of the fan base that doesn't agree with me, but the kid just needs to play. And I mean, sometimes you just got to let kids play. I'm never been one. Sometimes your shooter isn't your best defensive player. He makes some defensive mistakes. We got other guys on the team that are making defensive mistakes. If that's what's being held against him, then we need to take a longer look in the film room about what we're doing on the rotations. But that's a different argument. But he may be streaky, you know, but again, that was to a certain degree, you have to have that philosophy. If you're a shooter, you miss four in a row, you're making the next four. And I just think you got to get him some playing time. And again, I know everybody's talking about seeing him possibly in the transfer portal and all that, but I honestly not sure. I think if you could feel that, if the kid felt like he has a future here for next year. But I also go back to this, Andy, and kind of meaningful moment. We don't run anything for him. We don't run anything outside of that staggered double screen. I do want to go, you know, if you watch the women there, and I know this isn't DTW, but you watch the women there tonight, when they were in a clutch situation with Michigan State there tonight, they ran Sarah Scalia all the way across the baseline. She started on one wing. They ran her through a baseline double screen, couldn't get her open on that side. Then they ran her back all the way across the other side to get her a shot. We never do that for Mbako. We don't do it for Cup or for Gunn. We didn't do it for Miller Kopp. You know, I don't get why we're not running some stuff for shooters. Anthony Leal has limitations. I get that. But where was the winning shot there tonight? You planted him in the corner. You put the ball in Trey Galloway's hands, and he drove and he kicked it out to a shooter. I don't understand how hard that is, but yet we seem to think it's calculus as far as the coaching staff to do that. And I'm trying not to do the Ryan rant here because that's not my role, but CJ Gunn, run some plays for him and just let him play. Because right now, more than likely, you're not making the tournament anyway. Get as many minutes out of him. See if you can build him up for next year.
I applaud everything that you just said. that was outstanding. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not running stuff for him or anybody. But I do think the thing that you started that with is probably the thing that I thought of the most was he finally got a chance to play enough to get into some kind of rhythm in the game and be able to develop confidence within the game. And there's just times you're going to have to do that. And Woodson can sit and talk about that and media availability about, oh, I need to get these guys more minutes. I need to do whatever. You know, there's an argument to be made that, you know, some of the minutes that an Anthony Walker is getting at the end of the game, do you give Caleb Banks some of those minutes? Like, you have to see what you might have with these guys. And you're right. You cannot look at this team like one that's going to go to the NCAA tournament right now, as much as you might want to tell yourself that it, you know, things can turn around and whatever else, like there's a reality component to this of you got to figure out if he can play. And for a team that has substantial offensive limitations in the backcourt right now, it just, you know, it begs the question of whether he should get more time, and who knows what happens in a week from now. But, you know, Coach Motes, I know you said you had another moment that you wanted to hit, so I'll throw it to you to hit that before we get to stats.
Real quick, Khalil Ware, second half, sets up and beyond the arc, drills a three-point shot, nothing but nylon. The first three-point shot IU hit all night. And I thought to myself, why the heck didn't we do this 12 times tonight? You know, when you talk about a guy that's honestly shooting around 40% from three, that was something that, you know, you have an advantage, use it. And I would love to see us. I mean, Renew took a couple, didn't go in, but I was just kept kind of thinking to myself that was, you know, that was something where you're, you know, at that point now Purdue has to adjust their entire game plan to deal with something that you're doing offensively. And again, I felt like throughout the evening, it was something that Matt Painter didn't have to really work very hard. You know, we walked right into a scouting report.
Yep. Coach Marley, you said you did have one. You weren't content to end with the rant about the offense. You still want to jump back in, which I commend you for. So go ahead.
Well, it's not only the rant, but it's just, look, I know tonight was not fun to watch, but do we really honestly, you know, even as the biggest fan as I am, I wanted us to compete. Now, you can make the argument how well we competed, but you were going into a place that they know darn well what we did to them last year, whole different group of guys. But at the beginning of the week, if you would have said you were 1-1 at the end of the week, you would have taken it. Now, and I know everybody would have liked to have had the Purdue game, but you're 1-1 at the end of the week on a 2-game road trip. Now you got to find a way to win every game at home and still feel like you can steal one on the road or so. Get yourself in the best position for the Big Ten tournament, because you're going to have to probably win the Big Ten tournament, but get yourself as good a seat as possible. But seriously, I would have, at the beginning of the week, you told me you were going to be 1-1 on a 2-game road trip, I take it.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's go inside the numbers. But a reminder before we do that, the Meaningful Moment is brought to you by our friends at the Hoosier Ticket Project, where they help individuals and families experience Indiana University athletic events in person for the first time through the generosity of alumni and fans. To learn more about how you can donate money or extra tickets to help create meaningful moments for other IU fans, you can visit HoosierTicketProject.org. Again, that's HoosierTicketProject.org. And thanks again to them for being out at the event last weekend. Really happy with the amount of money that was able to be raised, even though I was unable to come home with any of the great auction items. But as we go inside the numbers, those are brought to us by Jackson Hewitt Tax Services. And if you live in Bloomington or the surrounding areas and you want your taxes done right, contact our friend and Chat Mob Hall of Famer Megan Mahaffey and her team in Bloomington, Bedford, and Martinsville by calling 812-339-3334. Or by visiting JacksonHewitt.com. All right, guys. So stats, we touched on this a little bit. The rebounding was a big number that we talked about. IU ends up with four guys in double figures, led by CJ Gunn with 13. Mackenzie Mbako had 12. Khalil Ware, 11. Trey Galloway had 10. As you look at individual numbers, Purdue had just two guys in double figures. That was Smith and Edie that we talked about before. They combined for 45 points. But they had a few other guys that scored, between 5 and 9 as you went there. Numbers that I'll throw out, there's points in the paint. Purdue only outscored IU by 2 points in the paint, 30-28. IU bench points actually outscored Purdue 20-15. So there's a couple numbers you look at those and would say, if you told me that before the game, you'd feel relatively good about it. But then you enter the rebounds. You get outscored 12-4 on second chance points. You look at the 3-point shooting. Purdue makes twice as many threes as IU. They make 8. IU makes 4. And then Purdue goes to the line 33 times. IU just 15. And they only hit 60% of them when they did get there. So, Bob, I'll throw this to you first. Any of those numbers particularly stand out to you, or anything else that I missed?
I would just start by saying this was not Purdue's banner day for them. It wasn't like they played, blazing great by any stretch of the imagination by their standard. I will add one that, per Synergy, that IU went to the post only six times tonight. So they were doing, and they scored 1 point per possession. So basically 6 points on paint touches. And that also includes passes out of the post, or post touches, I should say. Purdue went to the post 21 times and scored right around 1.1 points per possession. So really, when you think about how we've talked about this team being so reliant on the post, IU didn't really go to the post as much as they've gone traditionally in the past. In fact, I think, you know, to look at a couple other real quick synergy things, IU had 18 pick and roll ball handler, Purdue had 20, IU scored 1 point per possession, Purdue scored 8. One thing that Purdue did really well was they shut off Indiana's handoffs, you know, which is something they're not really good at guarding. Really kind of mitigated the damage there. So when you kind of look at this from just kind of a, what type of plays were, you know, kind of where the ball was being scored from or where the shots were coming from, so much of this was, you know, Purdue was just able to really use Zach Edey to dominate and have Braden Smith attacking very effectively off the bounce. And the numbers really kind of back that up. And then you throw the rebounding in it, and that pretty much just cooks you. I mean, that's why you take a team, a game that should have been, when you look at most of the statistical comparison, this should have been an even, you know, this should have been a 3-possession game at most. And in reality, turned into a 10-possession game.
Coach Marlowe, any numbers stand out to you?
I'm going to go back to the shooting again. The threes, the second half looked a little, at least a little more modern in terms. They shot 11 threes in the second half. They only shot 5 in the first half. You know, again, if you shoot 10 or 11, you're going to make it. They were 0-for-5, but again, 36% for the second half, and that ends up being 25% for the game. But the 11 threes, at least I can live with that. Purdue's got a 7'4" guy that's probably the player of the year, or will be the player. 7'4", and they shoot well. I mean, they're averaging over 20 threes a game. Everybody says, well, you got to go to your best, you know, your post, you know, get it inside to your post players. They got the 7'4" guy, and they still shoot it over 20 times a game from beyond the arc. Why can't we?
I'm right there with you. I mean, this is just, again, you got to invite a little bit of variance into the game here. IU was not going to win this game, given the disparity in how these teams have played so far, by not shooting a lot of threes. And yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, I think some of the ones in the second half were not even great shots, and they still ended up 4 out of 11. Overall, again, you just have to invite some variance into the game in order to try to overcome what's going on there, and they just were not really able to do that.
And real quick, there are times where you have teams that are talented enough to be able just to kind of do, not have that type of variance. This team does not have that talent level where they can just, you know, play chalk, basically. Where you say, okay, here's how it's, you know, we're just gonna kind of go with what we have, and we know we're gonna score 80. We're just not in that position as a program. So yeah, you got to have the variance, and you got to mix that up a lot, quite a lot at times.
Yep, I don't know that I can handle talking about too many more of the numbers. So we'll take a break. We come back, we'll hand out our game balls and Hoosier Hustle Award, discuss a lingering question, and look ahead to Indiana's upcoming opponent. That's all next here on the Assembly Hall. Stick with us.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This is Jordan Halls, and I never miss a shot or an episode of The Assembly Call.
And welcome back to The Assembly Call IU postgame show. Andy Bottoms here with Bob Motes and Jeff Marlowe, and we are breaking down IU's 79-59 loss at Purdue. It is now time for our Game Balls, presented by our friends Allie and James at Bloom Environmental. And they want to make sure that everyone knows about radon, a colorless, odorless, radioactive gas that is the leading cause of lung cancer in non-smokers. And according to the EPA, Monroe County and other surrounding counties throughout Indiana are expected to have elevated levels of radon above the action level recommended for mitigation. So contact Bloom Environmental today and mention Assembly Call for a free radon test kit and mitigation estimate. You can learn more about that at www.bloomenviro.com. All right, time for our game balls. Always a real treat in a game like this, but we got to do what we got to do. Coach Marlowe, I'll throw it to you first. Who gets your game ball for tonight?
Dang, I was hoping I was going to go last because I could just kind of agree with who everybody says. I don't think there's too many places you can go here. There's a couple, but for the totality of the game, because of the way he played from beginning to end, I'm going to go with Trey. I mean, 10 points, 7 assists, 3 rebounds, a steal. Just because of the totality of the game, from beginning to at least end, I felt Trey was putting his heart and soul into it. Didn't play his best game, but I'm going to go with Trey here just because of the, like I said, for the totality of the game.
All right, Bob, who you got?
I'm going CJ Gunn on this one. And Coach brings up some great points with Trey, but I look at CJ just because when you're down almost by 30 points, he kept scrapping, kept going. The play to end the half was a big one. I also think that this is one of those times where it's like you look at it and you say, okay, well, reward the guy that really kind of just performed at the highest level, of the season, and that was CJ tonight. Ended up with a 155 offensive rating. The only other guy that was over 100 was Khalil Ware at 129. So whether it was garbage minutes or end of the game or wasn't, did it matter? He did it.
Yeah, those were the two that I was down to as well. I'm going to give it to CJ. I just think maybe it's a springboard for him, but I liked what he brought defensively at the end of the first half. Was able to step up and make some shots. I'll probably be mentioning Galloway for the Hoosier Hustle Award here in a minute. But I'll go with CJ, just kind of an unexpected performance in a game like this that usually is one that might help you swing things in one direction or another. Obviously did not do that tonight. So I'm going to go with CJ Gunn. For tonight's game, hitting a few threes, leading the team in scoring in just 20 minutes, and also added 3 assists, which I thought was something you don't necessarily expect from him, but something he was able to do. That is now CJ's first game ball of this season, I believe, as I look down the list here. So that is that. All right, and then now up next we have...
The Hoosier Real Hustle Award.
Hi, this is Anthony Leal, and it's time for the Hoosier Hustle Award. But first, I have some exciting news to share about our friends at Evansville Security Services. They've been acquired. They are now part of the team at Security Pro 24/7, which provides trusted and reliable security for your event or business, from Bloomington, my hometown, to Evansville, where Coach Calvert Chaney grew up, and everything in between. Just like hustle can't be measured by stats, prevention can't be measured either. but it has a huge impact on your bottom line and peace of mind. So let the security pros at Security Pro 24/7 help you prevent a bad outcome today. Visit securitypro247.com to learn more. That's securitypro247.com. And tell them Anthony Leo sent you.
All right, Coach Motes, I'll throw this one to you first to get your Hoosier Hustle Award for tonight.
Trey Galloway. I mean, he played 34 minutes, the 7 assists, but I mean, I think all night he was, you know, he was doing basically doing everything he could to try to keep IU in the game. And when it was getting out of control, when it got out of control, tried to get him back into it. Just with on a night where he wasn't shooting the ball particularly well, did a lot of the little things that IU needed. So, to me, it's Trey.
Coach Marler.
Well, since I chose Trey for the game ball, I'm going to go here with who I was going to go with here, and that's CJ. To me, I agree with Bob. It was and you. It was really down to two people for these two awards. I went opposite with you guys, but this is where I would have had CJ.
Yep, and I will give it to Trey. I really thought he tried to do his best to will the team. Did miss all four threes he had, but wasn't afraid to try to go inside. Led the team in assists and had 10 points, all of which came in the first half, as I mentioned before. So I'll give him the Hoosier Hustle Award. You know, one guy we didn't talk a lot about who probably bears mentioning here is Khalil Ware. He ends up with 11 points, only got 7 shots, was 5 of 7 from the field, including that 1 3-pointer. Led the team with 8 rebounds, only 1 turnover, 2 assists. And if I'd be remiss to point this out, since Jared is not here, got auto-benched with 2 fouls in the first half, was among. You know, we talked about Galloway going out. Things really turned when he went out as well, just because of what that does to your floor spacing by playing Peyton Sparks with him. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, ends the game with, that's right, you guessed it,
2 fouls.
But like I said, what bears mentioning for him, I thought, you know, there's a play early in the game we touched on before we went on the air. IU was really, you know, scoring well early on. And one of the only possessions they didn't score on was at one where they gave him the ball in the post. He ends up shooting a turnaround air ball and just found myself wondering, why are you insisting on dumping the ball against him, into him against Edie, who's already pushed him well out of the lane at that point, and you know, he was the benefactor of a number of really nice assists from different guys, including Trey. But I thought, you know, there were some different things they could have done with him to help him be even more successful in the game than he was. Not the least of which was taking him out of the game when he had 2 fouls. Or, you know, I get taking him out of the game initially when you do that, but you got to be able to read the game and figure out, you know what, it doesn't matter at that point. Because they put Renew back in with 4 fouls, and he didn't last very long in the second half. So if you're going to make that decision then, you know, you can get yourself buried in the first half in a way that, you know, was potentially preventable. But so anyway, I'll channel my inner Jared to at least bring that up as we come close to wrapping up. You know, so now, you know, time for lingering questions. I guess there's two, one of which we already talked about. One is, you know, can this be something that CJ Gunn's able to build off of? We touched on that earlier. I think the other one is really, where does this team go from here? You had a week, Coach Marlow, you mentioned this, where able to really stage a valiant comeback, split these road games. You've got a week off, a week and a day off, really, before they play Sunday at home against Northwestern. And this team, you know, well on the outside looking in of the NCAA tournament, even sounded like something that Jared posted yesterday. Sounds like they're just being considered, you know, a team being considered for those doing NIT bracketology, which Scott has mentioned he believes is somewhere on the dark web where you could find more information about NIT bracketology. But, you know, where does this team go from here? And I guess more specific than that, you know, what are some things that they can work on? You know, I'll put you guys in the coach's seat here. You know, what do you do with this team over the next 8 days, I guess 7 days before they play again, to prepare them for the rest of the season, and kind of how do you recalibrate as a coach what you want to look for from that point forward? So, Coach Marlow, I'll throw that one to you first, and then Coach Most, feel free to hop in after that.
Oh, man, a lot to think about there. Obviously, I'm not in there, but I really would like to see them, Andy, over the next week. I know we're not going to change the lineup. He's going to start Ware. He's going to start Renew. I would love to see them flip-flop them. I'd love them to see Renu play more of the four on the offensive end and let Malik go inside and be the true back-to-the-basket five. I would really love to see more of the small ball. I really would. Work on more of the small ball stuff. Have, you know, if you really want to, work Renu and Ware kind of in and out of the lineup together. I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with that. But I really like, you know, play a little smaller. See if you can get some, you know, create some advantage. The other thing, too, at this point, and I'd be interested to see what Bob thinks about it a little bit. We talked about this at the meetup last week. I've heard you guys talk a little bit about it. I talked a little bit about it in some of the Discord stuff over the season. Let's find an identity. Let's at least start trying to find what's the identity of this program going forward. And I know Mike Woodson's going to tell you he knows what the identity is, but as a fan base, I don't see it. I don't know we're not a defensive team this year. We're not a modern offensive team, you know, in terms of offensive sets. And we just do a lot of standing around. Let's work this week on this. You know what? Cause this is the way I would approach it. Again, high school basketball is a lot different than college basketball. You know, you got a certain number of games left. You got the rest of the Big Ten, plus you're guaranteed one in the Big Ten tournament. These next set of games, we are going to start establishing what we are for next year. Now, I realize the roster can have a lot of change, but I don't care about that. This is what we're going to be, and this is what we're going to be going forward, and we're going to establish that, and that's where I would kind of like to see how starting this week.
And I would actually, yeah, I think that identity question has been one that, you know, I put it on the Substack a couple weeks ago, where defining what a good shot is in this offense, I don't exactly know what he's looking for offensively. Where are they trying to drive the ball on defense? Where do you want the ball handler? Are you trying to go no middle? Are you trying to force the ball middle and just try to keep it contained? Where are you trying to contain the basketball? What are your rebounding protocols? Like all of these little things that we look for as coaches, and we're not really seeing them. You know, it's hard for us to discern. And I mean, if you talk about what to work on, from my view, let's work on getting more guys involved in the offense. Let's work on really focusing on the reads that are necessary, and then the reaction to those reads, which are necessary in order for this team to get a little better. Because right now, I mean, we just played again. We walked right into the jaws of the jaws of a scouting report against Matt Painter. And the stuff he was doing was stuff you see in fourth grade rec leagues. We're going to foul out your best player. We're going to pack the lane and not let you do what you want to do. We're going to force you. We're going to stand in the passing lane and steal your passes. It's little things like that. And it annoys the crud out of me, because it's like, I really want a team and a, you know, to just take that. Cause I've been watching Painter do this to IU since Archie Miller, just to ram it down his throat, because it's almost like the greatest insult when you're coaching, when someone's just able to do that to you, when they just know what you're going to do before your players know what you're going to do. And I would just love to see this team show progress in this area so they can play 40 minutes of competitive basketball, which I don't think we've seen yet this year. We've not seen a 40 minute continuous, you know, competitive game from this group. And really just on both ends of the floor, clean up, you know, basically clean, you know, get more guys involved, and then also get better communication. Let's really work on the communication on defense, which is still sorely lacking at this point.
Yep. All right. Well, before we get to last call here, a couple quick housekeeping things. We will have AC Radio on Thursday. Next IU game is against Northwestern at home on Sunday, although the women, as I mentioned before, play on this Sunday, tomorrow, at 2:00, I believe, on BTN Plus against Purdue. Coach Marlowe, are you guys doing a post-game show for that, or is it to help people get ready for the Super Bowl? You guys are doing one, right?
Yeah, we'll be on roughly 4:00 Eastern, 3:00 Central. And Andy, I really want to take a chance here. You guys have been so good to giving us thoughts, but keep an eye on this. Tomorrow, Mackenzie Holmes probably will set the career scoring record for the women. She needs 17 points to bypass Tyra Buss. She's likely to get that tomorrow. I did a little digging. Thanks to Jared, by the way, who put this in the Substack. She's about I think it's 265 points. It's not likely, but if she can get a deep enough run in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament, there's an outside chance she will catch. She could catch Calbert Chaney as the all-time scorer. She'd need 265 points. They have 8 games guaranteed left. They have 6 left in the Big Ten season, the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament. So she needs a little bit of a run in each one, because even with that, she'd have to average about 22 a game, which is what she's about at over the course of the Big Ten season. So keep an eye on that. But she more than likely is going to end up as the number 2 all-time scorer in the school. She will bypass Steve Alford more than likely and move in into that spot as well.
All right. Well, see, that's a good way to get us going on a positive note here as we wrap up. So just a reminder to check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. You can use the promo code HOME23 at checkout to get 15% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. And with that, it's time for last call to wrap things up. Coach Motes, I'll throw it to you first for final thoughts on this 20-point IU loss at Purdue. Well said.
I think that's pretty much where I'm at right now. I'll just say, let's see where we are in a week and go win the next one. And the next one also, Jeff, let's win the next one tomorrow. You know, let's get that one out of the way.
Yeah,
exactly. Coach Marlow, final thoughts?
A couple things. Number one, back to Bob's comment, interesting here. McKenzie was asked in the post game the other day about something, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but her comment was all she wants to do is beat Purdue on Sunday, because if she does, she will finish her career never losing to Purdue. And you know, she'll be 10-0 against Purdue. Also, I do have a kind of lingering question. If it happens tomorrow, will Ryan share if he gets to have a Taylor Swift moment?
I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't.
I just had some fun. But anyway, whether she makes it to the game or not. But since he's at the Super Bowl and, you know, couldn't be here to rant tonight, I'm with Bob. It's just get to the next one. You know, you got to – We've debated this one. We've talked about it. It was not fun. It wasn't a good game. It was to a certain degree at times embarrassing, but you know what? We got to wake up tomorrow morning and start getting ready for Northwestern.
Exactly. And I will kind of start my thoughts. Coach Marlow, you mentioned this earlier, but condolences to Yogi Ferrell and the loss of his dad. It was unexpected. And so I have Yogi as the elbows in choice and somewhat in honor of his dad to end this out, but certainly our thoughts go out to him and his family as we do that. In terms of this game, I just don't know that there's a whole lot to say, although I somehow against my better judgment let this go over an hour. I was really hoping to not let it go that far, so I failed in that regard. But I think this is a game that you didn't look at really even before the season, and certainly not with how the season has gone, that you felt like IU had a chance to go in and win, or at least not a good chance to go in and win. And I think the frustrating part is that they showed things in stretches of this game that could have allowed them to be more competitive than they ended up being. And in some ways, that's kind of the story of what this season has been. So it's another game where this team has continued to show us who they are and where they're at. I think that, and when I say team and that, I also include the coaching staff in that. I saw multiple people talk about how the coaching staff just seemed kind of sitting back on the bench, resigned to what was happening. You know, Coach Tonsoni, you know, sent a picture of that in our text chain. And I think this is just a case of everybody feeling a little bit like most fans do at this point, where there's just a certain level of fatigue from trying to go through the season and hope that things are going to change while being shown repeatedly that it's going to be tough to see meaningful change as we go down the stretch. So this team is probably not going to lose out. I'm sure they'll win games here and there, no different than what they did against Ohio State, but there's certainly limits on what this team is going to be able to accomplish at this point based on what we've seen so far. And maybe they can use this week to figure some of those things out and get some positive momentum going down the stretch, build that identity that you guys talked about before. And so that's what I'll be hoping for. Still be back to root for it. It is no fun watching Purdue beat IU the way they did tonight. A little bit over a year ago from when IU went in there and did the same thing. And so a frustrating game for a lot of people I know, and certainly disappointing. But we will we'll be back to talk a little bit more about it and kind of look ahead to the rest of the season
on AC Radio later this week. But that will do it for us on this edition of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/assemblycall. And don't forget to go to substack.assemblycall.com to join our free email newsletter. Special thanks to Bob Thompson for the music you hear on the show. Special thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logo. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU Hoops again with you on Tuesday night. Until then,
take it from me, Yogi Ferrell. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. Go Hoosiers.
All right, gentlemen, should get hazard pay for filling in on this one, but I appreciate you being here. I certainly would have gotten it done in under an hour if I'd been alone, but the conversation would probably not have been as robust. So I do appreciate your, I do appreciate that, and hopefully, Jeff, you guys have a more positive show and result to talk about tomorrow afternoon for sure.
Yeah, I hope so too. There was something I was just thinking of. I was going to mention you guys once we got done. Yeah, it just, you know, I don't know what the identity is. I just don't. I don't know where we're going. Last year I felt like, you know, there was some identity, but, and I know we graduated, you know, a bunch of guys are gone. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you now. It's got to me. I don't follow the recruiting enough to really know. And I don't think one kid would have made a difference, but would Newton have helped this team?
Yeah.
I don't know enough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think from the standpoint of what you like, just the backcourt depth overall.
Yeah.
And I do think he probably would bring a different athleticism and toughness to some things that are there. But I haven't seen him play enough to know that for sure. But
so,
I think given where the guard play has kind of gone, it feels like that's but couldn't have hurt, I guess, is the way I would generally answer the question.
Newton's a driver. What this team is missing sorely are guys to dribble penetrate the basketball effectively. And that's what he would, you know, Ja'Kai Newton brings that to the table. And I think you're not wrong on that assumption, Jeff, that it would have been better. And this is not a knock on Anthony Leal by any stretch of the imagination, but I think if you had told me 9 months ago that Anthony Leal would be playing this many minutes at this juncture of a season, I would have think we would be winning by 25. I'll put it that way. And it's not a knock on the kid. He's working his tail off. He's doing a lot of the little things. He's doing a lot of the big things. But I think the assumption was that CJ Gunn was going to take that step up consistently. Mm-hmm. Caleb Banks would be taking a step up consistently. And I'd also throw Walker into that equation too, to be perfectly honest. Him not playing kind of shows that a lot of the sort of questions, the if this then mm-hmm. questions we had at the beginning of the season came up as it didn't happen. And so in some respects, I'm going to get flogged for this, but being 14-10 and not the University of Michigan right now is probably, this could be a lot worse.
Or Ohio State
or DePaul. I mean, you kind of go down the list of several programs. And even DePaul doesn't want to be DePaul.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, Newton would have been a big help. But at least it would have been an option where you have, again, you'd have more small ball type options with him available. Yep. Before we cut out, I want to say one more thing. Mike and I are going to be cutting a X's and Joe's episode this week. Should drop sometime this week too.
Good.
We're going to talk about rivalries and why they're important and how they kind of happen. Because we wanted to do this before the Purdue game, but I think we both have realized that we don't really want to talk about this stuff until after the result, in case we don't say something too interesting. You know, that way we don't say something that doesn't exactly come true in this. But we know that the rivalry conversation is one that, you know, we'd like to have with everybody and hope to
get. Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing it. So, all right. Well, thank you guys again for being here. Appreciate it. Thanks, everybody in the chat mod for being here as well after a tough loss. But everybody enjoy the IU-Purdue women's game tomorrow and the Super Bowl, and we will talk again on Thursday. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, everybody.
See you. Bye.